Good evening and welcome to the weekend review of Celtic Down Under, our Western Australian weekly edition of the show. I've already got a couple of comments from listeners that are eagerly awaiting for us to start. We've got Paddy Lavery saying, afternoon guys, I think he's in Ireland. Dr. Nax is a new name that I've not seen before, saying evening all as well. So I'm guessing that he's somewhere in Australia or somewhere in that part region of the world. And tonight I'm joined by three other contributors. Anthony, how's your week been so far?
Very good, Sean. I was at a 50th birthday party on Saturday night. Happy birthday, Robin. Very young 50th, I must say. And I'm nowhere near 50 either, just in case any of the viewers are wondering. So I couldn't watch the game live. So the method by which I'm watching games at the moment, I had to go dark from social media all day Sunday. So I finally got to sit and watch the game 7:30, 8 o'clock Sunday night. So savored that one. And yeah, had a social media free day on Sunday, which is a rarity. And the other things I was just trying to say is I'm getting into Ted Lasso again. So I watched the first episode of that this week. And that's some feel good telly for you if you haven't enjoyed that yet.
It's extremely difficult to stay off social media or avoid any kind of hint about the scores for a whole day.
I managed it. I watched the game without knowing.
This is the pain that we have down here of having these irregular kickoff times. Paul, how did you enjoy your weekend?
Yeah. Well, I actually did some work on Saturday because I was supposed to finish for my 3 weeks leave on Friday, but I've been absolutely slammed. So I ended up doing a little bit of work on Saturday, as well as getting around to eventually writing some of the ceremony for the wedding on Saturday. Vows still to be done. Speech still to be done. Luckily I've got all week off, so we'll get to that at some point. But yeah, it was, I had no idea how Anthony managed to avoid the score for 24 hours. Or thereabouts. It's nearly impossible to do that, even this far from home. I had to watch the game back because I was out. My mum's over from Scotland, and I was out for dinner with her and my better half. And probably had a few too many beers to be completely analytical in the evening. So yeah, I've watched it back since.
Smart, Tommy. How's your weekend?
I'm almost inverse to Paul, actually. My mum's dropped my mum off at the airport last week to go back to Glasgow. So she was actually at the game on Saturday, and she's the one that I normally go to the Celtic Sports Club with. So I actually missed the game on Saturday night as well, but I wasn't as good as Anthony and ended up having to check the score first thing in the morning before I went and played football myself, which was at 11 o'clock in the morning. And nice to see we got the result. Mum had a good time, and other than that, just playing on.
We've gone yourself from Sydney, watched it as well, and Dr. Nax has said they're from Melbourne, and they watched it live at 2 a.m, which again is something that's kind of tough to do at weekends.
Yeah, Tommy, where are you? To be honest.
Yeah, who's your team, Tommy? Name drop it, go for it.
Hammersley Rovers Masters. My first game for the 45s, new team this year. So I've ran the 35s at Hammersley for last 5 or 6 years. So just stepping down. So it's typically 45, late start to the pre-season here in 36 degree heat.
It's weird north of the river. I'm leaving strikers. I'm the Masters 35s and the president as well. I have my hands pretty full at this time of year trying to get stuff organised. But I managed to find some time on the weekend, on Saturday, to watch the Celtic game. I even watched the Sevco game beforehand. It was a real festival of Scottish football. And then I even stayed up to like 2 a.m. doing the guest host on Axom with Paul and Lawrence and Kevin, who's in Hungary. So it was quite an eventful Saturday night football-wise. I figured I'd make the most of it since we've now got 2 weeks without any meaningful football, just the international break coming up. So I decided to enjoy that. Okay, so we did actually beat Hibernian 3-1. It was a pretty non-typical home game. Typical in the sense that we won for our 15th home game of the season. I think it was 14 or 15. Makes us 27 wins out of 29 on the season. 27 wins is fantastic because I actually looked into it, and that is equal to or greater than the number of wins than 5 of the 9 in a row seasons. So we've already equaled or surpassed the number of wins from 5 of those seasons, and we've still got 9 games left to play. So we're going pretty well in that sense. One thing that was concerning me from the stats, though, was that we went 1-0 down for the 3rd league game in a row. So that was 1-0 down to Hearts, 1-0 down to St Mirren, 1-0 down to Hibs. And that had not happened at all in the first 26 games this season. We were always the first scorer. And then the last 3 games, we've conceded first. Is that a concern for you, Tommy, that we are losing these early leads?
Oh, not really. I mean, if you look at it, the St Mirren goal was a penalty. The Hibs goal was a penalty. Mm-hmm. The St Mirren game, going back to that, I think we did start a bit poor, a bit sloppy, but I thought we started the game on Saturday okay, and stupid penalty. The Hearts game, I mean, fair play to Hearts. That was a really good goal, a great cross, great finish. It's not really a concern for me because you know with this team that it doesn't matter what the score is at the time. They're just going to continue doing what they're doing and what they've been trained to do and what's been coached into them. So not really a huge concern for me. You always think that this team will come back at some point.
The stats in terms of results are obviously overwhelming. Not overwhelming, excuse me, but there's a difference between home and away in that we've won every home game and we've had a draw and a loss away from home. But pretty much every other stat is relatively even. We're actually even averaging higher possession away from home, just slightly. So I don't know if the actual results have too much bearing on that. It seems like every game kind of plays out either way. We did, despite conceding the first goal, we did start as overwhelmingly the better team. It was 9 minutes into the game before Hibs actually completed a pass. Paul, do you think that was interrupted by the injury to Hitati, or do you think it was something else? Do you think the weather had an effect on it? What do you reckon?
There's probably a bit going on there. I thought we started really well. The sending off will come to, but I didn't think it really changed the pattern of the game at all. They played pretty deep. The weather was pretty atrocious early on. I think Hitati going off is obviously pretty impactful. Turnbull's clearly not at the same level as Hitati is, particularly in open gameplay. Well, I'm sure we'll touch on his stats on assists and the like. But in open play, he just isn't as fluent in terms of joining up the game. A few things. I thought we started pretty well, as Tommy said. And watching it back, we could have been up well. You know, we had 3 or 4 really good chances, good crosses, the header off the bar. You know, there's quite a few chances we have before either the sending off or the goal. One of those goes in, or even a couple of those go in, even with the penalty, suddenly that half doesn't look as terrible or difficult or, you know, as much of a, you know, comeback as might otherwise be the case. So, look, we didn't start like an absolute steam train, which we have done in other games, but equally, I didn't think we were particularly off it. We just, you know, they defended really deep and in heavy numbers. And despite carving out 2 or 3 chances, we didn't quite take one.
Yeah, stats-wise, it does seem that the substitution between Hitati and Turnbull didn't actually affect us in terms of possession and chance creation. We were still very much on top at that point, but it seemed that there was the sending off did seem to change things, and we didn't really create too much in the first half after that, even though we played 53 minutes. The last chance of note I've got written down was 29 minutes in, and it was a kind of half chance for Kyogo. Anthony, what did you make of David Turnbull's performance? You comment separately on the first half versus the second half.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been a few stats being thrown around Twitter in the last couple of days just with regards to David Turnbull. I mean, personally, I felt he slows the play down, and that tends to be one of the sort of general criticisms of his play. He's very one-footed on his right foot. And I kind of feel that, yes, we had lots of possession. Yes, his accuracy of passing was 92%, but when you're playing square balls and playing the ball back to the centre half, you should be hitting feet and hitting targets. Hitati, you know, Moy, they're the players that play the ball forward and actually generate your chances. And I just kind of feel in the first half we were playing my man down, because I was just watching for him. Where is he? He just seemed to be absent. You know, in fairness to O'Reilly, he was getting involved and playing a lot of, you know, getting involved in the game. Yeah, I don't necessarily think he had a great game either, but at least he was getting touches and getting involved. McGregor had a quiet game as well. I really feel the midfield three was probably our weakest department on Saturday. Second half, again, the game sort of opened up a bit. Hibs were tired because obviously just constantly defending, 20% possession. Yeah, they're going to start to tire. I think one of the second halves went off injured as well. And obviously the 10 men as well, because, you know, they didn't really change the shape. They just played with no one up front. So, you know, they just pumped the ball along and it just got recycled and rinse and repeat. And then, you know, he whipped in a couple of good dead balls, David Turnbull. The pass from Jota to him to square up Astabanovic near the end. I think that's a very generous assist. It's probably all Astabanovic for that one. Statistics on paper, you know, if you haven't watched the game and on paper you think David Turnbull's had a good game, he's all these match winning stats. But if you actually watch the game, I don't think he had a very good game. And I can see why he's no sixth choice central midfielder, because you've got McGregor, Hatate, Moy, then you've got O'Reilly, Awata, and then you've got David Turnbull. So as a sixth choice, he's a very good sixth choice. But I would throw it back to you, if we were playing the Huns next week and that was your starting middle three, would you be okay with that? I don't know.
A bad timing for Awata in terms of his injury. He and Moy both got back injuries, curiously. With the Moy injury, Awata pretty much would have been the one that came in, which would have unlocked Callum McGregor going forward, and Turnbull wouldn't have really been getting in the team. And it was kind of why Ben Summers was on the bench, as much as he was never really going to get a sniff. Postecoglou seemed to be doing it to make a point of some kind. Tommy, did you think Adam Moy was a big miss? He's going to miss the games, the two Socceroos games against Ecuador as well. How much of a miss was Adam Moy at the weekend?
Well, I mean, I think it's easy to see that, since the turn of the year, since we came back from the World Cup, he's been probably close to our best player. So obviously he's going to be a miss. I think the thing with Moy is he's just, even though he's not quick, he just always seems to have so much time on the ball. And he's able to take and shield the ball, hold the ball, see a pass. O'Reilly, and then we're talking about that, to come back on Anthony on Turnbull. Like, I feel sorry for these guys, and I might have touched on this previously when I've been on. Like, they're sitting there not playing much at all, and it's really difficult to come on and play 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here, and it applies to Haksabanovic as well. These guys are badder. They look good coming off the bench. But it's really difficult for them if you're not getting a run of games to play football where you're actually playing 60, 70 minutes each week. You're starting the game, you get the momentum of the game, all these kind of things. It's a different thing coming on for 20 minutes when a team's tired as opposed to coming on and playing at the start of the game. Moy, for me, sorry, going back to Moy's point, I got a bit distracted there. Moy, for me, is just about the best midfielder in Scotland, along with McGregor. And until he came to Celtic, I have to be honest, and I didn't appreciate him as much as what he deserved to be. But yeah, he's definitely a huge miss. And as I said, I think one of the issues is that these guys that are coming in to replace him really haven't had a lot of game time because the team's been so sold.
Yep. And Moy is, what, 7 goals since the turn of the year? So he's been contributing. And he seems to get an assist every game as well, sometimes too. So I'm not sure of the stats on that, but he's been absolutely sensational. Mahesh has mentioned Turnbull assisting goals per 90 minutes is 1.15. So he is definitely contributing still, even though mostly coming off the bench. I don't know if that affects his average. You did mention yourself, Tommy, that these players coming off the bench. So obviously the result was massively impacted by some of the players that did come off the bench at the weekend. There was a few interesting subs. It wasn't the usual front five for front five. The first kind of sub was obviously the Hatate injury, which brought on Turnbull, who we spoke about at length there. But then there was the three subs around about 60, 65 minutes. I can't remember the actual time. and
68
it was
I think
68 there, and it was Haksabanovic and Abada coming on, and it was not one for one swaps. It was came on, but Kyogo stayed on as the number 10. Jota went to the other wing, and you had Maeda coming off, who was, apart from in the first kind of 20 minutes, was pretty ineffective for the rest of the game. What did you make of, Paul, what did you make of O's performance in particular, and Kyogo as well as a number 10? What did you make of that dynamic of an O striker leading the line with Kyogo moving about in behind?
Yeah. So it was actually Bernabeu that came on at 60 as well. Haksabanovic wasn't on until the 83rd minute, believe it or not, because he contributed quite a lot in that short period. It's okay. I just happened to be checking that earlier on, so I had it handy. Yeah. It was a good idea. When O was getting lined up to come on, it looked likely that he was going to be keeping Kyogo on as well. So I did expect them potentially to play two closer together. So sort of Kyogo dropping a little bit deeper was interesting. He's got great movement, so and a decent touch. So him linking up in behind was, I felt it was pretty fluent, and that generally the link up play was good. I thought he led the line pretty well. He took his goal really, really well. He was under a ton of pressure. It's a great look. We've talked about Turnbull, and look, I think all of us don't really fancy him anywhere near the first team, but his stats are good. And we've spoken about this in other weeks where, teams are tiring. He comes on, he gets 15, 20 minutes. He usually contributes at least an assist or a goal. And to Mahesh's point about, stats per 90 minutes, well, if most of your 90 minutes are 15-minute blocks against a tiring team quite often at home, then your stats per 90, it's not the same as somebody playing 90 minutes every week. So that's why the stats are great, but the eye test is equally important, and you merge the two together and you can get a pretty good result. But in general, I thought it went well. It was a great delivery by Turnbull. O shows his strength, and I think, look, that's going to be a massive asset. We've talked about his physique. Again, the kid's only 21. He's only just here. He put himself about as he has done. He was sniffing around, potentially could have been, maybe snatched at a couple of other things. But generally, I thought, he did what you want him to do. It would have, and we'll probably have a bigger segment on refereeing decisions and penalties and VAR in a second or before we're done. But undoubtedly, Huda should have got a penalty if he hadn't tucked it away. But to hold off the defender while he's got an armful on him and bullet the header in, he's done really well from there. So pass marks for him. His contribution is decent. Every time he's been off the bench, he's been able to contribute something. So yeah, pretty happy with that all around, to be honest.
Yeah, and interestingly, that was, I believe, the first game televised as part of this Korean TV package that we've sold to televise every Celtic game live in Korea. And it just so happens he comes off the bench and scores the winner. So that was a pretty great payback on that TV deal straight away. Dr. Nax is saying, O's goal had me celebrating, then wishing I had abs like that, but wasn't until after watching the replay that I realised what a great goal. Anthony, what did you make of the goal and the celebration? I know you watched it on quite a delay later, but it was effectively live in terms of your emotions. So how many family members and pets did you disturb with your celebration?
The cats drew a funny look, but no, I mean, it was a great finish. I mean, he came on with a mission to score a goal, get as a winner, and he did exactly that. As Paul said, he wrestled off the defender to get the ball in the back of the net. Great celebration, rips his shirt off, shows his physique. It's like, bye-bye, Gio, hello, oh. I guess if you're channeling Sulu, George Takei, you'd say, oh my, because that's quite the... quite the physique. I think when teams play like that and you've got two banks of five and they're basically not coming out of their 18-yard box, you put the second forward on and you just have a go at them because it's all they deserve. I mean, it was absolute turgid tactics from them. And I'll touch on Lee Johnson's comments after the match a little bit later on, but suffice to say, he thought they played well. But I'm like, well, you know, you brought on Hastrabanovic, brought on, obviously before that, brought on Kyogo, stayed up front. Maeda, ineffective in those situations. So when it's two deep banks of five at that, he just doesn't get the space. And he hasn't got the trickery and he's armory to be able to break that wing down. So he basically became a bit of a dead end. Greg Taylor, when I saw him coming on the park early in the second half before everyone else to stretch, I'm going, that's not a good sign. So I wasn't surprised when he got replaced by Bernabe. So I'm sort of thinking, well, that whole left side was a bit sort of defunct and dead, and then obviously got G'd up a bit with Jota coming across. And I thought Jota had a really good game. I thought he was in amongst it and trying to create, and him and Johnson linked up really, really well in the first half. And then, yeah, so I just, yeah, it was a great goal and a great celebration, and I think it was a real moment, and hopefully he can kick on from that. And he, you know, it's all about competition. So he's putting pressure on Kyogo, because now Kyogo missed out on a goal. He was unlucky, the one he chipped over Marshall, he got cleared off the line in the second half. And then he sort of chested that one in the first half, where there's an argument he probably should have stuck a head on it. But in another day, there's two goals. I thought David Marshall actually had a pretty good game for them. He, you know, definitely kept them in it early doors and pulled some saves. So it probably kept it tighter for longer. Like I say, despite the fact that, you know, one of our colleagues on Saudi Down Under tweeted, oh, Hibs never came out their own half, but I'd argue that they never came out their 18-yard box.
Yeah, you mentioned the one that was cleared off the line. That would have been a third assist for Turnbull if that one goes in. Just saying. And also, a lot to the untrained eye, you might have said it was two up front, because Kyogo and O were both spending a lot of time in the box. But if you're going to be very literal about it, you could consider it six up front, because it was basically just the four players to recycle the ball and then everyone else in and around the box against this sea of black jerseys. You mentioned there Taylor getting injured. I think that obviously you're only going to get so many angles, but Celtic TV showed Greg Taylor regularly throughout the halftime interval. So I think he'd actually stayed out for more or less the whole halftime break, just playing triangle passes to stay warm, which suggests that he's got an injury that's going to stiffen up if he stops moving. I thought he did well in the first 20 minutes, kind of putting the ball over the top to Maeda, and then for some reason that kind of dried up when Hibs changed formation after the sending off. But one thing that as well was Hibs had this one-dimensional single idea of how they were going to attack us, and that was to take a goal kick, stick the Australian boy Miller, I forgot his first name, his first start for Hibs, stick him out on top of Taylor or Bernabe, whoever the left back was at the time, and have David Marshall launch the ball at him so they could try and win a throw-in up in our half and then go for a long throw with Miller again. It was really the one-dimensional tactic, and Taylor was doing a better job of defending it. I thought when Bernabe came on, it was like, nah, it's just given up on. There's no point even trying to defend that now. What did you make of Taylor and Bernabe's overall performances, Tommy, throughout the game?
Well, I mean, I think Taylor, I mean, this is a tactic that we see pretty much every game. Like, even Rangers do it sometimes. You know, they'll take, if they get a kickoff, they'll take the ball and they'll just shell it to the left fullback. So, but what Taylor's actually good at, he is a bit of a short ass, but what he's really good at is making a contest. So he's obviously better in that area than Bernabe. But what I would say about Bernabe is, big question marks over him and his performances early in the season. Then he was out of the team for a long time. The last couple of times he's come in, he's actually looked, for me, a bit more competent, a little bit better. And there's a bit of promise there. Obviously, we'll get two short fullbacks, so teams are going to target that. But for me, like, as long as you've got your setup behind the ball, we've got good defenders, Carter Vickers, Starfield to defend the long throws, then it's not so much of a concern. My concern for me previously with Bernabe is he's looked very suspect defensively compared to Taylor. And Taylor, as I've said previously, is so important to our structure and the way we play the game in terms of coming inside, getting outside, never stops running. Bernabe's a bit more of an outside player. He likes to play a bit more outside. But for me, I'd really want Taylor back before the Rangers game. And I think both obviously him and maybe CCV are obviously struggling a little bit with injury. So hopefully the international break will do them well.
Dr. Nax has mentioned I think Jota and Bernabe seem to have a pretty good understanding when they're on the same wing. I actually felt that there was maybe a reluctance to give the ball to Bernabe when he was making those runs in the second half. I don't know if that's just the way the game was playing out or something, but he did seem to be struggling to, or I guess there was just a lot of players in front of him. But Jota received, the BBC match report gave Jota the man of the match, and to be honest, I wasn't quite sure myself. He does score a penalty, not exactly the best penalty, but he was really doing the same thing that he kind of did in the St Mirren game, where he was just trying to put the game on his back, seeing a lot of the ball, and just really, really determined to get things going. Paul, what did you make of Jota's overall performance?
Yeah,
I'll
have a couple of penalty. Well, I was actually going to jump in when Andrew was saying that David Marshall had a good game. Well, he generally did, but he didn't cover himself in glory there. Look, I thought Jota had not his absolute best game, but he had another really good game. First half particularly, he threw in two or three really good crosses. It was his cross, I think, for the chest chance for Kyogo. I think his cross again for a header that O'Reilly should have really done a lot better on.
It was.
He barely makes a contact. He should really at least force a save on that one. And then he does a good interlink up with AJ, I think, and gets himself in the box and has a good shot, which is unfortunately straight down Marshall's throat. But at least he's hitting a target. So yeah, I thought he was lively first half when we weren't really all that fluid through the rest of the team, fluent through the rest of the team. But I thought he played pretty, he was probably leading the charge first half. Second half, he definitely contributed. But by that point, it was sort of, there was a lock in the forward space. And look, his penalty is pretty poor, let's be honest. He gets a bit lucky. It's in that one place low where the keeper, any further wide of the keeper, funnily enough, he's probably saving that. Any closer, he's probably getting a foot to it, but it just sort of squirms in that nice spot in between. We've spoken about how many different penalty takers we've had this season, and he's probably not exactly covered himself in glory for getting another shot anytime soon. I think obviously we had other players missing, but if he starts getting to a point where that's kind of his level, then he's another player that we can sort of tick a box for that, like we've spoken about CCV and McGregor that can be contributing at that sort of 8 out of 10 as a bare minimum. So yeah, it's pretty happy with his performance. Obviously came off the back of a really good performance at Hearts last week. So he certainly kept a decent level up.
Anthony, were you wanting to add something there?
No.
Oh no, sorry. I thought you were trying to jump in with something.
Sorry if I could just jump in. I think one thing for me over the last few weeks, and even since he got here, is how Jota's just sort of bought into the club, and in terms of the passion of the club and the supporters and what we expect as being part of Celtic. And I think against St Mirren, he sort of against yesterday, even though it was a shit penalty, you just saw the passion that the guy's got.
That's our one
swear.
No more swears, that's our one.
Apologies. So I think that's... You're lucky I'm on my best behaviour, Sean. Hammersley, just northern suburb people, mate.
I think, the one more thing I would say on Jota as well, and I should have probably touched on it in my earlier comments, is his work rate's phenomenal. And his off the ball work is great. Like, he obviously won that ball back the other week against Hearts and sort of set the goal in motion for Moy and then Kyogo. But regularly he's willing to fight back. And we touched on this quite hard. I touched on this quite a few weeks ago on a day that he wasn't having the best game in the forward positions, but I thought his work rate and defensive work was really good back then. So yeah, he's kind of, he's bought into the club. His passion was there when he scored. He's working hard in both ends of the pitch. So I think, he's contributing really well at the moment.
Sorry, Tommy, did you get to finish your point before I interrupted you?
Getting to what Paul just finished my point for me, to be honest. I was just going to talk about in terms of his... all good. So it's just that work rate and determination, because he's got all the tricks, he's got all the skills. He's silky, but he's also got the work rate, he's got the determination, he's got the, just the heart, as you would say in old days. But it's great to have him at Celtic.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it since this song came out. He's been a great player. Awesome. So we talked kind of about let's go for the corners from our run sheet here. So my first note, one of my first notes 5 minutes in, is that we play a short corner and it really leads to nothing. And then throughout the game we have 15 corners in total, and we actually get our winner. We get our penalty, we get our equaliser from a corner that gets swung into the box, and we then manage to get our winner from what the goal that gives the lead, depending on how you define that, again from a corner. I believe the first one was an in-swinger from O'Reilly where we win the penalty, and the second one's an outswinger from Turnbull where O gets his head on it. So should we, I mean, it comes down to we, and I think Barcelona started it about 20 years ago, where if you actually look at the numbers, it's pretty low return on putting a corner into the box, like 2-3%. And I don't know if having VAR changes that, where you get things like that penalty that we got. We probably don't. Well, I've seen that a referee did give it without VAR. So I don't know if that kind of changes the stats around these things, changes the numbers. Anthony, what's your kind of feeling? Should we be playing short corners? Should we be putting them in the box? Does it depend on whether O is on the pitch or not? Should we be playing in-swingers, out-swingers? Who should be on the corners? What's your feeling on? We're going to keep getting corners, so what should we be doing with them?
Well, I had a bit of look into this today, statistics-wise. I think in the English Premier League, the average is conversion rates between 3-4%. So if you say between every 25 and 33 corners that you get, you should be getting one goal or goal-scoring opportunity out of that. So we'd actually end up with two on the weekend. Obviously, we generated the penalty, which led to the goal, and then obviously scoring. So for the last three games, we've had 28 corners in the last three games, and we've had one goal direct and then a penalty, which led to a goal. So on statistics, for that very small sample size, we're on track. I always feel we're hopeless at corners. It's just, again, it's a bit like the David Turnbull thing. Like, you look at him and go, I don't see it. But when it comes to corners, I feel that way as well, because we don't really have a lot of tall timber on the part. And I know you don't need to be tall to score corners, but realistically, we try and aim for Starfelt, and he generally gets marked at the game. He actually had a really good chance to score in the first half and hit it off the crossbar. So maybe, you know, in theory, probably should have done better. In swinger versus out swinger, I mean, I'm of the opinion, I was a central defender back in my day. I always felt that the in swingers were harder to deal with, because they're the ones that you feel like it's on top of you. So you're either relying on your goalkeeper to come out, and I think we've touched on Joe Hart being a wee bit flappy do at times. So you're really relying on Starfelt and CCV to defend those. But when we're attacking, same deal. So I prefer in swingers myself. But again, in a game like this, where it's packed out and recycling possession, there's maybe 10 in the box anyway, I'm thinking whipping it in and having a go is probably the better way to go. Because, and then it's a fair point you make about the VAR and the shot pulling, because obviously the referees are being more stringent on that. In years gone by, you used to see shots getting tugged left, right, and center. So if they're going to start picking players up for that, then you're going to find that your better headers of the ball should get more free runs at the goal. Theoretically, if you're going to deter people from pulling a shirt, then you should be creating more chances from that set play scenario. So I think you might see that might ratchet up a little bit. But who's to say next week somebody pulls a shirt and it's not a penalty? You know what I mean? Because the consistency is just not there. But this week it happened to be shirt pulling was the number one crime at Celtic Park.
Yeah, in my understanding of the in-swinger versus out-swinger thing is, I believe the professional take on this is that in-swinger is more likely to be cleared or intercepted by the goalkeeper, but will generally result in chances closer to goal than an out-swinger. So you get more chances from an out-swinger, but they'll tend to be lower quality chances. That's my kind of understanding of the stats behind that anyway. I think we can actually move on to...
Sorry, Sean, just while we're talking about corners, just noticed that we've started putting one player, maybe it's O'Reilly or CCV, at the front post. So I think the plan there is typically that's the player that would be the first one to clear a corner, especially an in-swinging corner. Mm-hmm. So parking one of our bigger players there that's, you know, half decent in the air, I think the plan and tactic would be there is to try and block that first defender from getting a meaningful touch, which is then allowing. And I think if you go back and look at the Starfelt chance, that's what's happened. There's a sort of battle at the front post. Neither of those players gets any contact, and it allows the ball to fly all the way through, and Starfelt comes onto it. So one to watch. Corners in general, I think, have been interesting. Obviously, we park Kyogo near the front post when we're defending, and he actually gets what seems like a more than average amount of headed clearances. So just generally, you know, I think we've spoken about this, I think, before, where we say, you know, down the years, our stats from corners have been really poor. Well, the stats we've just talked about, is that's generally the case by the sounds of it across the board. So I do think it's worth watching. There's clearly a lot of work going on in the training field just by those two or three things that we've picked up on. The last thing I would say on corners is there was a couple of times in the first half where we take a quick corner. You're right, they don't come to anything. But worse than that for me is, at one point, Starfelt is the player that's recycling it across the 18-yard box, because we've allowed him to traipse all the way up from his own halfway line, and he hasn't even been allowed to get enough time to get in the box when he should be probably number one target. It's quickly taken. There isn't anywhere to cross it in from the corner. It gets recycled further back, and then it comes square, and he's the player who's just arriving on the D to then just quickly shuffle it across to somebody else, because that's not really where you want him. So I just think we need to be a bit smart. I'm all for mixing up short, long, in swinger, out swinger, but I think our decision making just needs to be a bit smarter around that. Like, if you're going to go short, you know, maybe you either wait until your centre backs are all the way in the box, or you don't ask them up in the first place, and you rely on the players that are already there, and the quickness of it to be the defining factor rather than bodies in the box. Just an observation.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Paul. It's probably a debate which actually has no answer, I guess, because you know it's all counterfactuals and hypotheticals and stats, and then when you get to it, you go, yep, see, it should have been that way, you know, sample size bias, as Anthony mentioned. We do have four refereeing decisions to talk about, which we will, but I want to link in just by looking at two players and to link into that. One, I don't want Turnbull to get away with the blame for this one. So the lead up to the second Hibs goal is an absolute ridiculous concession of possession by Turnbull to give it away. And not only that, but he has two chances to win possession back in the following passage of play and fails to do that. And the result is that Hibs get the long throw-in, which they wanted in the first place. That's all they were playing for the whole game. And then, as much as Turnbull is to blame, the person who's really to blame is Carl Starfelt, who does a stupid shirt pull and the push in the back. And he has one of these every single game. And he actually had two. He had one in the second half as well, where he gives away a stupid pass and gets caught out of position. But the difference with that is it doesn't result in a goal, so he gets away with it. Tommy Starfelt, do you think he was affected by the hip injury that had him pulling out of the Hearts game, or the kick by Yuan on him earlier in the game, or is it just Starfelt being Starfelt?
Well, look, I think me and you have got a different opinion on Starfelt, and I think he's definitely a player that divides opinion between Celtic fans. For me, I really like him. I do know he has those silly moments in him. We've all seen them. But for me, most of the time, he's a pretty solid defender. He wins most stuff in the air. He really gets beaten one-on-one. The penalty, it's a clear penalty. It's just stupid. I don't know what he's doing. I was more surprised that the Hibs player didn't go down, to be honest. And if it was up the other end of the pitch, we'd want a penalty. So it's a stonewall penalty. Coming out of defence, yes, sometimes his passing can be questionable. I understand that. But I do think he is a right-sided centre-half. And I do think he is playing a little bit out of position. I think when you see Kobayashi come in, and Kobayashi's only played a few games for us, you can see the difference just having a natural left footer on that side can make. But for me, Starfelt is a great defender. I would always have him for the rest of the season, him and CCV number one, because defensively, I think he offers us a lot. Aside from when he does something that he does yesterday, but yeah. That's just what I think of him anyway. I know he gets a lot of shit from a lot of Celtic fans.
We're explicit now. When you put the explicit content warning, that's right, Tommy. Jared puts it on anyway. He just assumes we're going to swear and puts it on anyway.
Sorry.
So that's fine.
Apologies.
That's okay. So we mentioned there that Starfelt does get kicked by Ewan, which was actually, I don't think anyone had any complaints about that yellow card. It doesn't matter that it's Starfelt that's kicking the ball and follow through onto the studs, it doesn't matter. You don't put your studs in that position, that's going to get you booked every time. And then obviously the contentious decision that, yeah, I'll go to you, Anthony, for this one, because you mentioned it, you touched on it earlier. Lee Johnson, not only was aggrieved about, but also accredited Carter Vickers with an extra 3 inches of height, just to kind of over-egg his point. Now, I'm a referee, don't tell everyone, but I do a bit of refereeing. And the rule for dangerous play, when it's a boot to face, is it depends at what height this happens. So if you're a defender and you duck your head, like, so say the ball's like 2 foot off the ground and you do a diving header and somebody kicks you in the face, you actually get booked for initiating dangerous play, is the person that puts the head in the position to initiate dangerous play. Whereas if you lift your foot up to chest height, that's then on you for initiating dangerous play. So this one here is, for me, somewhere right in the middle and a really difficult call. And Stephen McLean takes a long time thinking about it while he's dealing with the head knock, because Carter Vickers does get kicked in the face. So he's got a full 30 to 60 seconds to think about what he's going to do. And then he does eventually give him a second yellow card. Anthony, what do you think? Was it harsh? What do you make of Lee Johnson's comments on it?
Well, on the incident itself, I think that if you've just been booked for stamping Carr style foul, you'd probably take a little bit more care going around the park. So he doesn't put that challenge against Carr style foul, and he picks up a booking against CCV, then he's still in the park. It wasn't a straight red, it was a second yellow. And this is something that's getting lost. So he was sent off. No, he got a second yellow card, a second cautionable offence. Now, it's a bit of a question of whether CCV was wrestling him in the first place and whether it was a free kick the other way. I think it was pretty 50-50 there. Both players were hard at it. Did CCV duck his head sufficiently to make your point where, like, he's initiating dangerous play? I don't think so. I mean, that worst case scenario, he's brought his head down to like maybe chest height. And the boys just kicked it blind, not really knowing that CCV stuck his head there. So he's, you know, on one hand, a bit unlucky. On the other hand, well, if he didn't put the stupid challenge in before, he'd still be on the park. So I'm kind of, I've had a bit of a think about this over the last 24 hours, and I kind of think that he kind of just got what he deserved, sort of thing. And like, you know, we've seen these being given. We've seen them being given reds, David Turnbull. You know, there was another one against Celtic. You know, anything near the head, any clash of boot on head when the, you know, when it's this height, is a booking or a red card. So, I mean, I don't think anyone's got anything really to blame. I think, you know, Lee Johnson was just moaning the fact that that was his game plan up in smoke. Not that he had much of a game plan anyway. And, you know, he had the cheek to come afterwards and go that Hibs played really well and we're going to use this performance to springboard the rest of the season. I mean, what was he watching? I mean, and then on top of that, he also said that both penalties weren't penalties either. So I think his basis for refereeing somewhere in the late 80s, early 90s, not in, like, you know, the 2020s. So, you know, football's evolved, and I just don't think he's evolved, basically.
Did you hear Ange's comments when he was interviewed and asked about Lee Johnson?
Yeah, I did. He said, "I've heard them for 105 minutes, mate. I don't need you to read them back to me. I heard them the whole game, and he looks like a right mouthy guy. So it wouldn't surprise me that he was moaning the whole game. And he ended up getting. And the funny thing was, right? So I was probably touching this a bit later, but the time wasting aspect that Hibs were engaging in, and there's one time Celtic were trying to play a quick free kick, and someone from the bench kicked the ball back onto the park, and the referee actually did the right thing, went over and booked Lee Johnson, even though he wasn't the one to kick the ball back on the park. He said, "Well, you're responsible for your bench," That now means that he misses the Motherwell game. He has to be in the stands for that because he's picked up a couple of questionable offences now. So, you know, people think it's cute and it's gamesmanship, but on the other hand, it's petty and pathetic. It just depends where you sort of fall on it. And so, yeah, they got what they deserved.
Paul, what did you make of Hibs' overall tactics before we do talk about the other refereeing decisions? What the time wasting, the heavy tackles, Lee Johnson's kind of crassness about it all. What did you make of it?
Oh, look, we've kind of come to deal with this. You know, a lot of teams, they're sitting deep. They have maybe have one out ball. The heavy challenges are kind of standard. the time wasting was actually a bit more pronounced than we've seen from other teams. I think other teams have been a bit cuter about it than they have. To the point about knocking the ball on the park, it's a good pickup by Anthony. It was one I was going to mention, but there was an earlier one at a corner, I think it was, where David Marshall threw a spare ball quickly on into the penalty box, so we couldn't throw a corner in, and he should have probably picked up a booking for that. I'm not sure if it was picked up in commentary. I don't know if it was picked up by the ref. Look, in general, I think they got what they deserved, right? So, you know, and another day, and I saw one of their comments much earlier on said, you know, we should have, you know, it, by the chances we created, we could probably have at least a goal first half. And I think that's probably fair. Over the piece, we wore them down. I think we would have worn them down even if they had 10 on. So they came to grab something against the run of play on the break. They got that. And, you know, you need more than one. If you're coming to Celtic Park these days, you need to grab more than one against the run of play to have any chance, because we're gonna score more than one goal, especially at home. So, look, and if tying into that, obviously, the general refereeing performance where we're there, I thought, in general, the refs got, you know, the ref and his team got most things right. The one thing I would say, you know, they got the big decisions right. There was a weird one. I don't know if anyone else picked up on this. When Hatate went down injured, we knocked the ball out of play.
Yeah.
So it should have been a Hibs throw. And McLean started it again with a drop ball, and we retained possession. We never knocked it back to them. So that could have been really contentious if we'd then, that passage of play had then resulted in a goal for us. Then, you know, they should have been some. And it never really got touched on beyond that moment in time. So it's probably for the best it didn't. But that's a, you know, it's a small thing they got wrong, but could have had bigger ramifications. But I thought in general, they got the big decisions right. I wondered if whilst he took that time to decide if it was a yellow, is he getting, you know, support from VAR at that point potentially? And is that part of his decision making?
No.
Or has he seen it completely and decided that, you know, he's just going to weigh up whether he's going to give him a yellow or not?
As far as I know,
they can't recommend on yellows, but
they also can't do anything without making it a VAR review, I think, that has to be officially announced. That's my understanding of it anyway. So that
mind you, both his linos are mic'd as well as the fourth official, so he could
the linesman should have said something, but I think he had a pretty good view of it. I think he had a pretty good view of it, though. It was kind of right in front of him, so he didn't take his time.
You notice we didn't. Like, the camera cut to Jota just as it happened, so we had to rely on... The next thing we saw, he sprawled in a heap, and then we have to rely on replays, but... Look, I said that I thought it was a little bit harsh a few weeks ago when the Hibs player got sent off for the kick in the face of the Killie player, because he just had eyes on the ball. And this one's even more contentious.
I remember that, yeah.
But, you know, I did. But as we spoke about, it's dangerous. So regardless of whether the intent's there or not, he's endangered an opponent. So in the same regard, well, he's not. He still kicked him in the head here. So I've got some sympathy for the Hibs player, but to Anthony's point, he was already on a booking. What's he going to get? Who's he hooking it to? He's the furthest man up the park. It's just going up to Joe Hart. Like, nothing's going to happen there. So decision-making-wise, it's daft. And if he's playing, you know, if he knows anything about CCV, he's coming for every ball to try and win that. So even though he's saying he's just throwing a foot at it to hook it over his head, you can well expect that Cameron Carter-Vickers is coming to try and put his head on that ball. So, yeah, I don't have a lot of sympathy for him either, purely on the basis of being daft. But in terms of the height, could have gone either way. Would we have been up in arms if it had happened to us? I saw a couple of comments like that on the comments from the listeners. I imagine a good chunk of our support would be. I think those of us that are maybe applying a bit more perspective would have said, well, you've been a daft, so you probably get what you deserve.
It's kind of divided opinion in the comments here. We've got Otter Stone Lock saying, never a booking, still a contact game. We've got Stoned Outlaw saying, other way around, if a player was booked, involved in the dangerous act of play, a red card. So, bit of a
can I kind of quickly mm-hmm. just say that intent isn't in the laws of the game? And you
it's
had.
It's not for that, no.
Not for that.
It's for
no.
some so, things.
But not for that. So you had. Yeah. Neil McCann and the other ex Richard Foster going on about intent and all that on Sports Scene, and they don't even know the rules, and they're supposed to be giving you analysis of the game. Two blue noses, what a surprise. But sorry, I just thought I'd just throw that in there. So,
those two, and we can link that to the next. Well, let's stick the two things together so we can, because we are running out of time. But those two did Sports Scene pundits claimed that the Carter Vickers penalty was a dive and not a penalty. And then we also had this Celtic didn't have a penalty at home all season long, and then we get awarded a second one when Abada's through and goal. And when it was live, I didn't think it was a penalty because I thought Marshall had won the ball. But either way, the referee gives it. And then when it goes to VAR, Abada's actually just kicked the ground and tripped himself up. I guess that one's not... The only talking point around that Abada one is it VAR doing its job for the first time? And but more, what's more of a discussion is, was the Carter Vickers one a just penalty, Tommy?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you see the penalties that are being given now, like Starfield's one, the foul on O against St Mirren, pulling the jersey, you know, if they're going to start giving, I mean, for years they haven't been given penalties for that sort of stuff because it's gone on in the box for years and years, that everyone's pulling everyone's jersey. But it seems to me now with VAR, particularly in Scottish football, that they're starting to give them. So the thing with Carter Vickers is he went down. If he hadn't went down, probably wouldn't have been a penalty. And then conversely with O, you know, if he doesn't score that and he hasn't gone down, then we might have got a penalty. So for me, the CC one, definitely a penalty. And the Abada one, I'm embarrassed that he didn't stop the VAR check, to be honest, before it happened. He should have said that, you know, I've just fell over here, you know.
Yeah. So. And it's, he didn't, I know he dived against Sevco, but that one wasn't a dive.
It wasn't a dive. He just kicked the ground, didn't he? So, but yeah, for me, yeah, like, he should have said, look, that's no penalty, you know.
And we'll leave the discussions on Abada's contract situation to the Wednesday crew. That's more of one of their kind of topics. We focus more on the football and the officiating. Speaking of officiating, there was a couple of, as much as VAR did its job at Celtic Park, it may or may not have done its job at a couple of miles down the road at Motherwell. When there was this, I'll just put it up there. This was given as onside for the Sevco scoring to go 3-2 ahead. Now, I don't know if it comes through in that picture that I've chucked up there, but when I was watching it live, I was like, oh, this is going to... Like, okay, they're going to chop this off. It's clearly offside. And then, yep, it's onside. I was like, what? How on earth is that? Now, to make my... So I'll let you guys comment on that in a minute if you wish, but what was even more interesting about that was that the next day on... So actually on that game, Chris Boyd comes out and mentions the Jota offside that we get given against us at Fir Park with the camera at the opposite end of the pitch, et cetera, et cetera. The one that was potential goal of the season. And if anyone's telling me that looks more offside than the Sakala one, then I don't know, man. Like, how that Sakala one can be given as onside and that Jota one given as offside makes no sense to me. Now, what on the next day in Sports Scene, we then have Stuart Kettlewell comes on and says, oh yeah, Crawford Allen says to me that benefit goes to the attacker. In any instance where it's marginal, the benefit goes to the attacker. Well, it clearly wasn't the case in that Jota offside goal at Fir Park. And it also wasn't even the same thing that Crawford Allen said publicly for this Kyogo goal against Hearts, whenever this was last year, where Crawford Allen comes out publicly and goes, oh yeah, sorry about that. Kyogo was offside. We should have caught that. That should have been disallowed. Where was his comments about benefits going to the attacker at that point? So let's just summarize Crawford Allen's comments. Oh yeah, Kyogo was offside. Should have been chopped off. Jota, offside. Yeah, VAR did its job. That's definitely offside. Sakala Cole, where a line shows that the attacker is actually ahead. Oh yeah, benefit of doubt to the attacker. What are we supposed to make of that, Anthony? Any comments?
Well, I must admit, I thought the Motherwell first goal looked a touch. You know, Barisic now had the hands up for that one, and it's hard to tell from that angle as well. I got the clean bill of health from VAR as well, so I don't know whether the VAR cameras were broken down that end of the park, because that was in the first half and the Sakala one was in the second half. But you're saying to yourself, well, this is supposed to be technology which is infallible and it's all Hawkeye and it's like, you know, it's like the DRS in cricket. Like it is what it is. Like it's not that you run the simulation and it tells you whether it's onside or offside. There shouldn't be any interaction from the actual VAR referee. But when you see these decisions being made, you sort of start questioning, going, well, is there a human influence in this or not? Like, can you trust the system? And, you know, the paranoid tinfoil hat wearing part of the support will be going, they're cheating, or this or that. And I'm looking at it more from a science point of view, going, well, if that's a technology, that's a technology. But by goodness, it's one of those optical illusions. I mean, you remember back to the, it's a bit different, but the World Cup, remember the one where the ball was out or wasn't out, and it depended on what angle and that. I mean, it could be one of those situations. It could just be a bit of a, you know, a camera angle thing, but it doesn't look good. But, you know, especially how we were treated with the Jota one, because that would have been goal of the season. That would have been goal of the decade, I reckon. But anyway, it is what it is. And they got a 4-2 win, right? But the important thing here is that they leached 2 goals to Motherwell. So, you know, again, they're not going terribly well, but, you know.
They were terrible goals as well.
Oh, some of the defending.
Especially like, the second one.
Yeah, it was abject, man. Like, if we get chances like that against them in 2 weeks, we'll absolutely kill them. Tommy, did you see it at all?
No, I didn't, mate. To be honest, like, I don't really watch many of the Rangers games, and I try and avoid a lot of the stuff because...
Oh, that's a third swear? Come on, Tommy. Stop saying words like that.
Did I swear, did I?
Ah, you said I'm Rangers.
Sorry. The Rangers, at least.
I'm on edge, Sean. Honestly, I haven't seen it, and I generally don't pay much attention to them. I only pay attention to them when they play us, because for me, I'd be quite happy not to ever play them again, just because of the 12-year or 10-year history. And the previous history, I'd rather just not have anything to do with them, mate, to be honest. So I don't sit down and watch. That's just me.
That's it. Tommy's back on message now. 12-year history. That's it. Good lads.
Greece with the I'll get sacked.
The only thing I wanted to say, that some other players in the media, James Tavernier coming out and divvying at the old, oh, we'll show up next time against Celtic, you know, sort of rubbish. So in that reputable... That red steel rag, the sun, and you know, I was like, oh, why do you do this to yourself? Like, why? Yeah. But anyway, like, you know, if and you'll probably have it up in the headline up in the change rooms the week before we play them, but yeah, crazy. And the other one I wanted to touch on was Derek McInnes somehow trying to wrangle Ange into his post match rant about VAR, absolutely clueless. And Kilmarnock are on a bit of a free fall, and I wouldn't be that bothered if they're the ones that end up going down.
And you could have been mistaken for thinking that McInnes was coaching Hibs at the weekend. It's the most un-Hibs performance ever.
It must be tall poppy syndrome. I don't know why Ange is getting dragged into everything at the moment. Like, he's getting blamed for all sorts of ails, or Celtic and Ange are getting blamed for all of the sorts of ails and mumps and moans around Scottish football. It must just be tall poppy. Do you know what I mean? Must just be easy target. Like, because... like, these teams just need to look at themselves instead of try and externalise and blame to the team that's not perfect but is probably the best run in Scotland. Like, I don't know. Paul, any comment on any of those things outside of Celtic this weekend?
Look, just probably touch on Aberdeen. Unbelievably, they're breathing down Hearts' neck. They've absolutely thumped them on the weekend. And look, there's some comment around, you know, caretakers getting the job permanently, how long does that last? So, but if Robson somehow gets them third, he's got to get the job, hasn't he? Like, you wouldn't expect that you could get them from where they were up to third place and he doesn't get the gig. So it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. There's still quite a few games left. I think we touched on this a few times, that there's underneath Celtic and the other lot, that there's so... there's inconsistencies from every team below there, so there's a lot can still move around there, but I think Hearts probably felt that they had third sewn up, and it'd be interesting to see how that goes, because that's a, you know, I never watched the highlights, I just saw the result, but it's an absolute thumping, you know, for the Dons to be winning 3-0 against Hearts. So be interesting to see how that pans out. And Robson's a local lad, so and apparently they were singing his name, as you probably would expect, having got a result like that. And the Dons haven't had much to sing about for years. So, and they're a pretty quiet crowd at the best of times. So interesting, definitely to keep an eye on that. And obviously he's an ex-Celtic man as well. So, you know, we wish him well.
Yeah, and they all need to play each other after the split. And it's actually, there's a couple, Livingston and St Mirren are right in the mix for that top six as well. So it should be four games left before the split. So there should be some interesting things happening there. Most of our games coming up are against teams that are not particularly fighting for the split. So we've got like Ross County, Kilmarnock, who are bottom half no matter what. Sevco, who are top half no matter what. So our games pre-split are not going to have too much to play for in that sense. So that could, being optimistic, could benefit us. I'd like to just, I know we are just ticking over an hour now, but I'd just like to come back and finish on a point about the Celtic game, because there's two players we haven't mentioned yet that were both. So BBC gave Man of the Match to Jota, but if you actually look at the BBC public votes, they gave Man of the Match to Carter Vickers, who wins a penalty. And then like the 92nd minute when it's 2-1, he has a crucial block when Hibs are on attack. And he was top rated on the BBC public votes, the ones where it's like an average rating. And my other person that I thought was a contender for Man of the Match was great throughout was Alistair Johnston. So after chucking those two names into the mix, I'm just going to go down the house and just get a quick comment and vote for who you thought was Man of the Match against Hibs at the weekend. We'll start with you, Anthony.
Celtic actually gave it to O. So he represented with it after the game. So I'd actually probably agree with that, because like he came off the bench, a little bit of a pressure situation, because normally the other times he's come off the bench, the game's been won, it's all sewn up. So this actually had a little bit of meaning. And I thought he did quite well when he came on, and it was the right presence. So I think O, just for that winning goal, I thought that was that was worthy.
Paul?
Yeah, I noticed that it was announced in the stadium. So, yeah, you could argue that for a half-hour cameo, pretty important. It's between him and Carter Vickers for me that, you know, he's been solid throughout. And then, yeah, he's crucial in the penalty, which gets us back into it. And obviously that's the building block for the rest of the result. So either or, happy either way.
Tommy, who was your man of the match?
Yeah, look, I would give it to Jota personally. His final ball maybe wasn't always there, but he just kept trying, kept probing all day, trying to drive the team on. And for me, he was probably a most influential going forward. So I would give it to Jota. Unfortunately, I agree with the BBC. Is that swearing?
I'm one of these contrarian folks who like tries to see beyond the play that results in goals and assists and things like that, because you know you can have a goalkeeper chuck something in the net and then you end up with a player getting two goals and Man of the Match because whatever. So like that's why I kind of mentioned Alistair Johnston. There was a couple of comments about Gone Yourself here saying Hacksaw with Shout, who again can't do it from the start but can do it from the bench. Hacks Ibanovic and Abada team. But anyway, we are well over an hour now, so we will wrap up there. Can everyone please be sure to join in tomorrow for our Tuesday show and on Wednesday for our weekly podcast. We've got the three shows every week now. Ours is the late one. Thanks for anyone out east that stayed up this late. I know that Dr. Nax was struggling earlier. He said, I have to ask before I fall asleep, does anyone know what Johnson was upset about when Hacks Ibanovic scored? Does anyone have an answer to that? Sorry, Dr. Nax didn't get to it in the natural flow.
No.
I didn't actually notice it myself. Yeah, so it would be currently midnight, I reckon, for Dr. Nax. But that's going to change next week, right? Clocks go next week. Is that right?
I think so. Yep.
So it should only be a 2-hour difference from that point. But apart from that, we'll just, anyone got any final comments before we sign off?
I'll be a married man next time I'm on. So I don't know if I'll be on next week, but...
Not too late, Paul. You can get out of it. It's not too late.
But, no. So yeah, married on Saturday and probably take a week's sabbatical next week. So I'll be back on a week after.
Did you time that for the international break, Paul? Or was that 20 minutes?
It was. I can't claim it to be perfectly... executed. But when it landed like that, I was absolutely delighted. So yeah, it's worked out very well. And my mum's a season ticket holder, and she's delighted. She's not having to miss a match for it. And she goes, she's going around for another week or so, but then she leaves midweek because she wants to be back, obviously, for the Derby match, which she'll be back in her seat for. So she's only come out for three and a half weeks, when most people would want to come for longer, but that's absolutely the reason she's back going back
for the Derby game. Yeah.
Absolutely. She's not that daft.
Tommy, anything to sign off on?
No, just actually looking forward to the international break, just to have a stress-free week, not worrying about how the Celtic will go, and looking forward to the next game in a couple of weeks.
Anthony?
Try not to swear next time.
20 years ago today, we beat Liverpool 2-0 at Anfield. John Hartson with probably one of the best goals of all time. So I do suggest you check out Celtic website and have a wee reminder of the time we studded Liverpool and went through the next round of the UEFA Cup.
Yep, oh, it's always a great goal, that one. John Hartson, a Liverpool fan as well, so interesting. Thanks everyone in the comments for joining in. Thanks Team Western Australia for keeping me company tonight and talking some good football stuff. And Tommy will clean up his language for next week, naughty boy. Okay, that's all for us tonight. So we'll see you next week. And remember, Tuesday, Wednesday show. Hail, hail.
Hail, hail.
Hail, hail.